from the complete Blue Note sessions, well, actually from the complete Blue Note 1960 sessions, Dexter Gordon, with a tune called I Was Doing All Right. And as we look at the personnel, we see, of course, Dexter Gordon on a tenor sax, Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, Pittsburgh's own Horace Parner on piano, George Tucker on bass, and Al Harewood on the drums. From the album Doing All Right on Blue Note Records, and also in the new collection that's just put out on Blue Note, Volume 1, Dexter Gordon, yes, indeed, complete Blue Note Sessions, Volume 1. And, of course, we think about our man Bug Bryce taking it back in the day, saying, a day without Dexter is like a day without sunshine. And I want to remind you that you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. Well, I'm sitting here recording the music for the show, and you know I'm not live here in the studio, but I'm here at home in my secret lab. Sitting here at home recording a show, and some of you folks who have pets can relate to this. You know how your pets get into a groove and listen to the music? Some of them try to sing to it when they hear different parts, like the one puppy that my grandkids have like to try to hit the high notes when the trumpet comes in. But then the other parts, they just like kind of like mellow out, you know, like this last Dexter Gordon tune that we just heard. So I know a lot of y'all can relate to that, that have pets in your home. I used to have a tabby cat, and he would just like lay at my feet and just like chill. It's all good on a Sunday morning, you know.
Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm blue. My disposition depends on you. I never mind the rain from the skies if I can find the sun in your eyes. Sometimes I love you, sometimes I hate you, but when I hate you, it's 'cause I love you. That's how I am, so what can I do? I'm happy when I'm with you. Thank you. Sometimes I love you. Sometimes I hate you. But when I hate you, it's 'cause I love you. That's how I am. So what can I do? I'm happy when I'm with you. I'm happy when I'm with you.
favorite tunes tune called Big Alice. I think Don Pullen wrote it, but I like the version Don Pullen did too some years back. Yeah, Big Alice. That was my man, Howard Johnson, and some of his fellow tuba players getting down for the funk of it. Yes, it's a Sunday morning, and you're listening to the Jazz Corner. We got a lot of stuff for you, things that you may not expect.
A man died, went up to the gate, Peter met him at the gate. Said, what do you want up here? He said, I had sinner's trouble. Say, you had what? Say, I had sinner's trouble. Say, you mean sinner's trouble? He said, I mean sinner's trouble. I was coming out of the hotel with a woman and her husband, Sinners. Like I was walking through this, you know, I down here going through this, going through over to 16th Street. I took a shortcut through that little graveyard there. You know that old graveyard, been there every year. And I was walking along reading on the tombstones, you know. And I got the old maid's tombstone. I stopped and read. It had on it, who said you can't take it with you? But one thing, you can't stay here with it, I know that. And you can't come back to see what happened to it either. Look at that little hip baby, set no bad laugh. Yeah, man, ain't that a killer? Look at it, bless his little heart. You let me have him for 2 years and you'll never have no more trouble out of him. He'll be one of the hippest children that ever lived. You want to see Santa Claus? Your mama told you about Santa Claus, sugar. Well, she told you a lie. I'm going to straighten you out right now. Damn, you going to grow up believing them lies. You want to come up here with Mom? Ain't he cute? Uh-uh, don't do that. Mm-mm. Got your hands too low. Wherever a person's hands is usually where their mind is. Sometimes your mind can be very low. That's right. What that you got in your mouth now? A bottle?
Wine.
No, it ain't. No. Maybe you was raised different. That baby got it. You asked for it, brother. You asked for it. A man went down to Miami on his vacation. Got 4 weeks. Right? He packed up, had this beautiful luggage, pocket full of money, his checkbook. He goes down to Miami, checks in one of the finest hotels down there, relaxes. Well, I'm here for 4 weeks. The sun will do me good. After he's there 2 weeks, the man says, I'm sorry, but you're undesirable. He said, what do you mean I'm undesirable? I pay my bills. I don't owe you anything. I'm a respectable man. What do you mean I'm undesirable? He said, well, we just don't want your kind here. He said, what do you mean, my kind? He said, they tell me that you wet in the pool. He said, well, nearly everybody wets in the pool. Say, yeah, but not from that high diving board up there. But let me tell you something. You talk about that ticket I got. Let me tell you what happened to Mom week before last. You know where I was? way down in deepest Georgia, right here at election time. That stood a whole row of folks with me at the end of the line. Now, we all had come to cast our votes, but don't you know they got mad at me when I said that I was sent there by the NAACP? Every time I get up to the front of the line, they push me back in the rear. And from the evil, mean look that they had on their face, I said, damn, what am I doing here? I said, please, Martin Luther King, I don't want a boat. Ooh. I said, please, Reverend King, please don't make me boat. Whoa. I had a dream last night. I asked for my equal right. Somebody said, Mom, you're next. And there I stood with a rope around my neck. Please, Congressman Powell, they ain't gonna let me vote. Ooh, ooh. I say, listen, Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, damn, I'm gonna vote. Ooh, ooh. They arms reach out for me. They must want me desperately. But if I can just break free, they've seen the last of me. In Georgia, Georgia, no peace will I find till I catch a plane north and throw Georgia out of my mind. Ray Charles can have it, you hear me? Oh, yeah!
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
Now, baby, listen, baby, don't treat me this away, cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, cause it's understood. You ain't got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
Well,
don't you come back no more.
What you said?
Don't you come back no more.
I didn't understand
you. Don't you come back no more.
You can't mean that.
And don't you come back no more.
Oh, now, baby, please.
Don't you come back no more.
What you trying to do to me?
Thank you.
20 minutes till the top of the hour, but I wanted to take some time out and let you know what we've been listening to, a wide variety of things. The last tune we heard was Shirley Scott with Stanley Turrentine from Deep Down Soul. Also, getting into a little soul and blues, Labi Sapphire. I got the blues from the Shaolin Soul Episode 2 compilation. We're checking that out. Also, Lowell Folsom. Yes, indeed. Lowell Folsom doing Black Knights. Ray Charles for you. And we heard Hit the Road, Jack. Moms Mabley. Talking about kids and Let Me Vote, Big Alice, Howard Johnson, a bunch of other tunes that are haven't been released yet, and we'll talk about those in the next couple of weeks. A bunch of different tunes here. Nat King Cole doing Sometimes I'm Happy. Dexter Gordon from the complete Blue Note 60s session. And let me see who else is in here. Eddie Henderson from the Smoke Sessions label doing Shuffle and Deal, and also Okara Imani with Just Happy to Be Here. Man, Mr. Evan Dry Bread Quartet doing Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum. Mr. George Freeman doing Cha-Cha Blue, and Miss Eugenie Jones doing A Brother. So a bunch of different stuff there in this last hour and 40 minutes. As we continue the program for you on a Sunday, I'm morphing into one-to-one here at WRCT. Reach the
So, if you're outside of our coverage area, remember, you can listen to WRCT online. Live streaming available at www.wrct.org. WRCT Pittsburgh. You have no excuse not to listen.
You've tuned in to Pandemonium, a public affairs anthology from WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. And now, Pandemonium.
We are sitting on Melinda Crawford Purtue's back deck, where it's a beautiful, sunny day. Thank you so much for inviting us here.
Thank you so much for reaching out to me. This is great.
Melinda, among other things that she does, well, you tell them.
Well, I'm the orchestra director and string area head at Westminster College up in New Wilmington, Pennsylvania. I'm also the violin teacher, and I direct the Scottish Fiddle Ensemble. I mentioned the orchestra, do all the string pedagogy stuff. If it has strings, it comes across my desk.
I'm up here because I'm a folk musician, and I want to talk to you about Scottish fiddling. Most Americans don't understand that there's a difference between Scottish fiddling and Irish fiddling. I mean, they just all think of it as Celtic music.
I know. I can't count the number of times I've been asked, oh, so you play Irish fiddle? No, I don't. I'm a Scottish fiddler. But a lot of people get them confused. They are very similar sounding. And that's sort of where the idea of the Celtic fiddling has grown. But the way I like to look at it is that if you're into languages and if you speak Spanish, you can probably understand a fair amount of Italian. Okay. Yep. But you can recognize that they're different. If you don't speak Spanish or Italian and you hear them next to each other, they probably sound very, very similar. It's the same thing with Scottish and Irish fiddle playing. For those of us that do it, we hear the differences. For people who don't, it sounds just super similar. And they are. They're cousins and, you know, right across the water from each other. So it's not that surprising.
Over here in North America, both types of fiddling. Actually, there's more than one kind of Irish fiddling and there's more than one kind of Scottish fiddling. But Yep. But all that fiddling from the British Isles and even from Normandy, all that stuff came over here. How has it affected music here?
Well, it's interesting because over in the United States, at least from the Scottish perspective, we have this fierce desire to sound Scottish. And we get very, you know, concerned. Are we sounding Scottish enough? Whereas if you go over to Scotland, they're just playing the fiddle. They're having a good time. And they're not worried about sounding Scottish because they are. So we're very concerned about, you know, the tradition and sounding Scottish, where it's actually a very fluid tradition. It's very vibrant and still going and still evolving.
To me, that's one of the things that folk musicians are always interested in. It's like that combination of preserving the origins of the music, but then also setting the stage for innovation.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And in Scottish fiddling, we also have this culture of composition. So we learn all the traditional tunes, and then we learn sort of where the modern tunes are sounding. So we learn a tune that was written 20 years ago or 5 years ago or 1 year ago. And then once you hit a certain point, and it's pretty early on, the culture encourages you to write tunes. So the repertoire is ever expanding. And the trick when you're writing is, does it sound like it fits in the niche of Scottish while it's still being sort of innovative and sounding different and sounding new? So we're still pushing the boundaries. It's like a dog chasing something. If you've ever seen a dog chase something under a bush, the nose is under the bush. They're after the rabbit, but the back two legs are hanging out behind so they can make a quick getaway. It's the same idea. We're trying to make sure that we're in the Scottish style, but we're still pushing the boundaries a little bit. So our back legs are back in the tradition, but we're still trying to push it and make it sound new. It's so neat because the tunes that are at the core of our tradition, they've already lasted for hundreds of years. And I think there's really good reason for it. The music itself is fantastic. And even today, when we're dealing with these tunes, we keep the music alive and it's about the music, but our interpretation of it can shift. And I think that's what keeps it alive and keeps it growing, is we're focused on the music, but we all bring a little bit extra to it. So if I were to play a tune today that was played in the 18th century, they would recognize it. And vice versa, I would recognize what they're doing. But like our backup styles or the harmonies that we're using, or maybe even some of the variations that we're putting in, because this style encourages variation and creativity and individuality in our performance, I think it would be appreciated and not scorned. So, you know, William Marshall listening to me play, he'd say, yeah, I recognize that tune. What are you doing with that? That's interesting. Or maybe someone else would say, well, that's sort of cool. What was that?
You mentioned keeping the music alive. And my main music radio show is called Whiskey Before Breakfast, which is, you know, a fiddle tune that most Americans think came from North Carolina artist Mike Cross. But that's just because he made up drinking words to it, and it became a hit on the festival circuit in the 1980s. But if you look at that tune, it is an example of keeping the music alive, where you had traditional melodies coming over from the UK into Canada, working their way west to Saskatchewan, getting incorporated into sort of the music that the native people were playing, and an Anglo-Canadian fiddler puts out a record with it on it, and it starts moving down to the U.S. I'm sure you could tell lots of tales like that with Scottish music, too. I mean, that's keeping the music alive and watching the tunes change as they move around.
It's really interesting. I'll give you a quick example. A number of years ago, I was doing a gig with a friend of mine who's a very good Irish fiddler, Charlene Adzema. She's, I think, out in Wisconsin now. So she has her Irish rep, and I have my Scottish rep, and we were trying to find some tunes we had in common. Well, we finally realized Miss McLeod's. We have Miss McLeod's in common, and we started playing, and it was awful because suddenly we realized I'm playing in A, she's playing in G, she's playing what I considered the B part first, and I'm playing the A part first. It was completely backwards. So we ended up having to make a compromise. We were both uncomfortable. She played it for me, A, B, and then I played it for her in the key of G. So we were both chafing a little bit while we were playing it, but we came to a consensus on how we were going to perform it in order to make it work. But it's an old tune. It's the original title, and this is MacLeod of Rasay, which is a small island off the east coast of the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And then it moved from Scotland, it hit Ireland, it's come to the U.S., and it's in so many different cultures. I mean, you could probably walk into a jam anywhere in any style and start playing the tune, and it may be a little different from what they're used to, but everyone's, oh, it's Miss McLeod's, and they'll join in, to the point that Aaron Copland, he even took it and he integrated it into his hoedown from Rodeo, which is really uncomfortable for me when I play it because I know what the tune is, and then I have to sit in the orchestra and behave myself and use the bowings that they're giving me in the style that they want me to play. It just keeps going, and it has changed, but it's still recognizable. And I think the cool thing, because I'm a big believer in just keeping the music alive and, you know, never put down your instrument and just keep going, is that that one tune has spread to so many people, and so many people play it, and then so many people can play it together. It's just amazing.
In my old time community, we call it Hop High Ladies. But, you know, it's the same tune.
Same tune. Different title, same tune. But I could come in and I was like, oh, I know that. And I could do something with you.
We are talking with Melinda Crawford-Purtue of Westminster College, who, in addition to all her classical music work, is a world-renowned Scottish fiddler. You started to mention Copland using folk themes. Mm-hmm. Folk themes are everywhere in classical music.
They are, especially with composers that reach to their nationalistic roots. And it's not just, you know, folk music from the UK. Vaughan Williams did a lot of that, and his music is incredible. You listen to it, you can tell the elements of folk music that he's bringing in there. But also composers like Brahms and Dvorak. I love programming Dvorak and Brahms for my orchestra. And as a folk musician standing on the podium conducting an orchestra, it's fun because I'm also talking to them as a folk musician. You know, if we're playing different, you know, Slavonic dances or, you know, things like that, I'm talking to them about dance form. This is a dance, and this is what we need to do because this, is, at its core, is a dance. Yes, it has been put into a symphonic package, but they need to understand what it means to waltz. We played the Prague waltzes recently by Dvorak. And, you know, especially right now, if we hadn't had a pandemic, I was going to have them put their instruments down. I was going to teach them how to waltz because they don't know how to waltz, and we were playing waltzes. But it would have helped them so much if I could have just, you know, made them get up and dance so they could feel the dance energy and what needed to be done. So when we do that, when we deal with folk music, I actually talk to them frequently as a folk musician, which I just get a kick out of. And the kids are used to me, you know, they know what I do and they know the perspective. And it's great. All of my violinists take Scottish fiddling from me at some point. They've had it with me. And I remember I was in a rehearsal with them, and it was a new composition. It had nothing to do with folk music. But there was a rhythmic figure and an articulation that I wanted them to do in their music, and it just wasn't happening. And I finally realized it was almost akin to a Scottish snap that we do in our Strath space. We're working on it. It's like, folks, it's a Scottish snap. Do it like a snap. And it was beautiful because the next time we did it, it was perfect. And, you know, that just gave me, it's like, I used Scottish snap in rehearsal and it worked. So, you know, so they get both sides of it from me. And it's fun. And I'm just having a ball because I love it whenever my classical and my Scottish sides intersect. I have a switch. You know, when I'm sitting down in an orchestral rehearsal, as a violinist, my switch is thrown to orchestral music, and I'm following my music exactly, and I'm performing, and I'm using more classical techniques. But then when I'm doing my Scottish stuff, I'm improvising things. I'm improvising my bowings and my ornamentation, and I'm thinking about it differently. So it's a skill that develops. I remember there was a time that it was several years between my stints in an orchestra and sitting down and yelling at myself mentally, going, no, follow the bowings. No, you can't do that. Follow the bowings. Be good. Because my switch had gotten rusty.
What kinds of things do you think about when you're pushing the boundaries?
A lot of times, actually, I'm thinking about rhythm or I'm thinking about variations. Our tunes are so short. So when I play through and I'm interested in making it a longer set, I will play the tune a million times and I start listening to what the tune is trying to tell me and where it might want to go or where it could go. And that becomes a variation. Sometimes it's a rhythmic variation and sometimes it's a melodic variation, just a change in note. That'll just be immensely satisfying because I feel like it needs to go there.
One of the things I've noticed, and I'm used to, if I'm playing for a square dance or a contra dance, you know, put together a two-tune medley or a three-tune medley. But it seems that a lot of Scottish fiddlers and Scottish fiddlers in the United States as well, and a lot of the Cape Breton fiddlers, they do these like 4, 5, 6 song sets.
Some of it does come from playing for dancers. Because for dancers, the tradition, like a standard setup is like 8 tunes, twice through 8 tunes. So it sort of comes from that. And we have key changes in between so you can hear the different tunes. But it's also trying to turn them into performance pieces. Starting with Skinner in the 20th century, fiddling sort of moved out of the kitchen and only playing for dancing and went to the concert stage. And with that, we can't just play, you know, a 16-second tune. And be done. Get sort of boring and disjointed, not something for an audience to just really listen and kick back and enjoy. So we do build longer tunes. I know some of mine can be, you know, one tune long or two, all the way up to 4 or 5. And if I'm doing multiple repetitions, then I'm sitting on a 5 to 6 minute set, which is a nice length to do if you're on the concert stage.
Do you enjoy playing for dancers? Do you get a chance to do it very much?
I don't get as much opportunity to play for dancers as I would like. I do occasionally, and it's a blast. I love it because there's nothing better than watching people dance to the music that you're creating. So most of my work is actually for the stage.
Well, you've mentioned several things that I think we should stop and let you talk about. What kinds of things you're doing in Scottish fiddling here at Westminster College?
One of the things that I love about it is that at Westminster, anyone who plays violin can take Scottish fiddle lessons for credit. So you can take Scottish fiddle lessons for credit. That will actually count toward degree programs. It really will. And I've built a string ensemble. We're in a little flux right now, the pandemic and people traveling around. We're called Kilnatid, which translates to mean literally string music. But because it's in Scottish Gaelic, it's Scottish string music. So we do that and we perform around fairly locally, nothing too far, because we can't take the students too far away from classes. And here every summer I host the Strathganey School of Scottish Fiddling, and it is a full week of Scottish fiddling 24/7. We run classes beginning up into advanced. We do private Scottish fiddle lessons. We have evening events. We do concerts that are open to the public. We do everything that we do for the entire week is completely Scotland and Scottish fiddling centric, because we'll jam till the early morning hours and then get up again and we're right back in class. So it's a fabulous time and the best people in the world and the best music.
Melinda Crawford-Pertue and I are having a good time sitting on her back porch, and you've gotten international recognition for judging Scottish fiddling contests. What do you look for?
The first thing, first and foremost, is we're looking for style. We're looking for Scottishness and the interpretation. So if I think about Scottish fiddling as being a circle, everyone has their own spot in the circle. So the first question is, are you in the circle? And if you're not, how can I help you get into the circle? If you are in the circle, what are you doing there? And how are you making it your own? How are you dealing with interpretation? So, I mean, there's execution. You know, are you playing grossly out of tune? You know, are you losing your tempo? There's that type of mechanical stuff that we evaluate as well. When someone's playing a slow air, are you telling a story? What's your phrasing like? Are you using your ornaments creatively? Are you making me feel something? Or is it wooden? And if it's wooden, how can I help you relax that so you can focus on the music and make that story? That we ask them to play a slow air so we can hear the musicality. We ask for a march because you're asking people to move without making them dance. So it's a nice in-between type of feel, because we think frequently of people dancing. But with a march, you have to move them across the floor, but they can't dance. So we ask for a march. And that also suggests some of our connections with the bagpipes, because the bagpipes do a lot of marches. So it's a three-tune set. So the air they play separately, then it's a march, Strath, Spey, Reel as a three-tune set. And they're shifting different tune types, which transitions that can be really interesting. So they go for the march, and then they go into the Strath, Spey. And the Strath, Spey is the national tune type of Scotland. It originated in Scotland. It is associated with the Strath, Spey dance, and is a major genre in what we play. So that has to be in there. And there are loads of ways of playing Strathspeys. There's the Highland style. There's the Northeast style. There's a lot of stuff in terms of interpretation. So, you know, which style you are sort of planting yourself, how are you doing? Are you getting the light and shade, the tension and release? Are you getting the danceability? How's your execution? Are your snaps nice and snappy and crisp? So we're looking for that type of stuff. But, you know, it's still music. Are you doing any phrasing in there? Have you forgotten your dynamics? And then we transition into a reel, which is just, it's all about the groove. It's all about the dance. You know, it doesn't have to be the fastest thing on earth, but it does have to have groove.
So it was march, Strathspey, reel, in that order?
Yep.
Could you describe, because like most Americans, I don't know what the heck a Strathspey is.
Sure. But I think, honestly, it'd be better to play one.
Okay.
A Strathspey is combined with it's a series of sort of long, short, short, long types of notes and the rhythm. So this is a Scottish snap. Okay, that sort of short, long. If we were looking at notation, it'd be a 16th dotted eighth. Combined with that basically, those are the building blocks of the Strathspey. So just a nice Strathspey. Thank you. That's an old tune by the name of Captain Campbell. And the nice thing with that tune is that it can go both Highland and Northeast. So you can hear the same tune done in two different ways. But that's a great example of a Strathspey Bay. And you can sort of feel the beat as I'm playing it. But that type of rhythm just permeates Strathspey Bay tunes.
You mentioned you could do it in two different styles. How? Uh-huh.
So the way I just played it was more of a Highland style. If you've ever been to the games and you've seen the dancers, mm-hmm. the ones that are going boingy, boingy, boingy up on their toes, it's more of a Highland style. So you're going to hear... The other style would probably be a little more appropriate for like the Royal Scottish Country Dancers. Mm-hmm. That is, it's actually a little more associated with the origins of square dance. Mm-hmm. And that's a little more across the floor. So you're not going to hear the whole, they're landing on the floor. But...
questions I emailed you about how choosing to play one of your favorite Strathspeys as a almost like a lament or an air. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so much variety you can do with those melodies.
There is. And again, it comes back to the sort of the music stands alone. So I just played that one is two different Strathspeys, but I've taken a Strathspey and I have turned it into a lament because when I was playing it, that's what the tune was telling me it wanted to do. And from my own personal interpretation,